Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Racer's Mindset. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt, and this episode is brought to you by Racetech. And now here's my co-host, the big boss of the hot sauce over here at the podcast, and a brand newly crowned champion, Andrew Hobson, otherwise known as Hoppo. How's it going?
Good, Brad. How are you?
Not doing too bad.
Fresh off a win. Team Big Bear won the Cat 2 50-54 championship. It was good. It's good to win. Now looking at maybe Cat 1. We'll see what it brings over the off season.
A new challenge.
New challenge was
We all got to be challenged.
So, you know, in leading into this, I'd like to bring in this guest today. I mean, without a doubt, he has some serious clout with racing, champion, world champions, championships, nationals. Victor Sheldon, he is a jet ski champion. He is a national mountain bike champion. What else? He is a world gravel finisher, podium finisher. He was a Thor team manager for Chad Reed. So let's welcome Victor into the show.
Thanks for having me, you guys. It's an honor.
Good.
All of that honor is on this side of the table, I assure you that. Victor, the list of accolades is long. We're going to kind of spin the clocks back and talk about some of the things that you've worked on over the years. But what do you got going on now? What's sort of on the plate as far as your day-to-day, as well as some of the things that you're conquering?
I promote a grassroots local mountain bike race series here in San Diego County, which Andrew comes and races, you know, periodically. Sometimes he has some scary moments.
Yeah, I've lost some skin there.
Yeah, I looked over at him one time and he just had blood running off his face and he's just like having a beer. I'm just like, dude, you want to get cleaned up? Like, it'll be fine.
You need medical attention.
And I also promote a global brand called Hammer Nutrition. So, that's pretty much my two things that I'm doing right now, promoting local grassroots mountain bike racing and, pushing the Hammer products.
I can definitely say that, you know, attending the races and competing and, you know, Victor's out there every lap you come around, he's in a different spot on the track. He's clapping, you're waving, calling out people's names. Come on, you can do it. So, you know, when he says grassroots, he's grassroots. I mean, he's on the track. He's out there. He's just, come on, guys, girls, whatever, you know. So, and it brings a good vibe. And, you know, when you see someone like that that's next to you, you know, that just shows the type of person he is and the grassroots series. And that's why on a Thursday night, it's packed. So,
yeah.
Good job.
I mean, we started the summer series in like 2015. Our first race was 2013, but it's been in the works for, you know, almost over 10 years. And, you know, just building that vibe, you know, and people wanting to come and hang out, you know, especially in a bike race, because normally people come, they race their bikes and they leave.
Yeah.
You know, there's no hanging out, BS. And so pretty much every Thursday night, I get teared up because I see all these people just, you know, hanging out. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see the community just kind of accepting it, you know, after, you know, kind of the vision that I've had for a long time.
When we look back over your career and, again, the jet skis, the mountain bikes, I mean, there's some serious structure. There was some serious training. Obviously, your wife is behind you the whole way. I mean, there's a lot going on there to unpack. And then, again, you're still enthusiastic about it today as you have had to have been 20, 30 years ago when you started.
20, 30 years ago, what? Excuse me?
You've been a professional your whole career. Basically, a professional athlete and an entrepreneur. So, you know, there's a lot going on there, and to be still involved and just into it 100% at this time is just, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's a good lead in. You know, I go at quick and dirty and what I'm doing with it right now, just like I did when I was racing jet skis in the 80s, 90s, 2000s. You know, it's just like I prepare for it. you know, I want to give back to, you know, I wanted to make people feel like they were on a grand stage, you know, a world stage, global stage, whatever you want to call it. But just, I just wanted to give back to the local community as far as, you know, I didn't want to go and take this, you know, what we built here and go to Utah and, you know, Arizona and kind of, you know, go all over the place. I want to keep it right here for, you know, for what we have in our backyard. And, you know, I just feel like, and I wanted to make these people feel really special. So, you know, after, you know, a summer series race, the championship race, giving them jerseys and giving them a bag full of fun stuff, you know, and just seeing them walk away with this a huge smile on their face. It's pretty freaking cool, man. It's like,
and yeah, also too, I love the leader's socks, you know, the leaders of the series halfway through get pink socks and go, oh, that guy's the leader. You know, he's got the plate so far. So
give him a little recognition and whatnot, you know? So, but yeah, it's been super fun, you know? I mean, I've been really fortunate, you know, my whole career, you know, to be able to do what I've wanted to do. You know, you brought up when I worked at Thor, you know, that was a lot of fun. But man, it was like working in an office with people, you know, and, that don't have the same sort of drive that I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was working my ass off. Not, you know, well, the Thor thing was kind of, I was just coming out of being a professional athlete. So I didn't really know how to work for in an office, you know, and I was thrown in there. I didn't even know how to do emails. Like it was literally like, what, you know, I felt like a total idiot because I had to ask all these questions to people. And, but most of the time they were just on Facebook and they were just doing like stuff. And I'm like kind of grinding on it, trying to figure it out. And it's like the workplace came so easy for them and it was a lot harder for me because I was always used to going and just, you know, not writing emails. Like I didn't feel like that ever got anything done. You know, it's just it felt like I needed to be in the field and, you know,
right,
having connections and making stuff and coming up with ideas and making them come alive.
Yeah. That's definitely a big transition for whether it's any athlete really, because it's funny, a lot of people wouldn't think that a motocross track or a jet ski race is a place of commerce or is a place to do networking, but it absolutely is. It's actually maybe one of the best places for it, because like the only place to hide is in your trailer or in your truck. You're getting nothing done. You have to be out there, you have to shake hands, you have to look people in the eye. And it's almost the most raw kind of sort of networking. You have to go out and do these things and actually be able to communicate with people, have conversations, which, like when you're going back and forth over email, there's no real tonality to it. You don't really like, you can't really build a rapport over three emails spread out over a week. Whereas, yeah, if you're able to shake the person's hand, look them dead in the eye and say, hey, I've got this cool idea for to signify which ones are the leaders in my series. They're all going to wear pink socks. You make pink socks. Can we use your pink? We can promote your pink socks while also promoting the leaders of our series. Why don't we work together? All of a sudden, we're doing business.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, it's definitely a network. It's a stage for networking for sure. You know, and I've been lucky enough to go to enough events to know what somebody would like, you know, with their events. So, you know, the event thing is you definitely get some gray hair with it. There's a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of things that can go wrong. I'm putting myself out there logistically and liability wise. You hope you have yourself all set up in the back end, but you never know. It's nerve wracking, but you know, I still love to do it.
That is awesome. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, especially with Hoppo on the course, you never know when he might be bleeding or.
Yeah. I've
got skin off on my elbow from last week, so, you know, it gets me every year.
I think every cyclist has, you know, pretty raw elbows, but,
I want to go back a little bit in time to the jet ski era a little bit, but I want to kind of ask a few questions around, you know, with the jet skis. I mean, obviously Cowie was down the road in Irvine. you're down there. Where are you at? Where are you at now in?
Vista.
You're in Vista. So you were kind of really in that area. It's like Cowie's there. Jet skis are big. The beaches are right there. And then, so you were kind of in that era, and then you had Dogger and Wardy and all those guys at Cowie as well. Did all you guys do a lot of cross training at times? Because you rode moto your whole career pretty much on the side as training.
Training with Ron Lachine.
that's where I was going with that. Like, cause me and Ronnie, man, I hope he's watching this. Me and Ronnie, I had a lot of fun with the guy. Like he's a dear friend. Like he and I go way back.
Legend.
Maximo was my first ever sponsor. And you know, and Ronnie loved jet skis. So, you know, I was just like, I was in, and I've been an athlete for Maxima since 86, 87, you know, like in the, you know, the right in the beginning of my career and their career, really. So.
Oh yeah. No, my blood type's 927.
Yeah. Going back to like all those guys love to ride jet skis and I love to ride motorcycles. They would rather go ride jet skis than ride motorcycles at the time. Because the vibe of jet ski was, you know, at the beach, you know, it was pretty, you know, not much pressure for them, you know, and really not for
myself. Bad boy club.
Yeah. And really not for myself either, because, you know, we were a small sport and we could go out and we could party and do stuff like that. We didn't have, you know, factory team managers, you know, hovering over us, you know, so, I loved the sport of motocross. That was my first ever love. But I became a jet ski racer. So every chance I got, I was riding my motorcycle. And, as you all know, I mean, it takes a long time to be good at a motorcycle. Like you look back at a video or something when you first started, and you're like, oh my God, I am horrible. You know, so. You know, the time it takes to get the throttle control and do jumps. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be one of the toughest gnarliest sports that is out there, really, you know.
Oh, totally. And yeah, the learning curve is super steep. And for that reason, it can take years, before you really look to have any type of aptitude. I almost liken it to like, I grew up playing hockey and I can tell if someone grew up playing hockey or if they did not grow up playing hockey. Right. Like there's same thing with someone who's been riding a motorcycle or a jet ski their entire life or someone who learned it as an adult. There's just a certain like body mechanics and fluidity to their movements that it's just so difficult to kind of like adopt those types of that body language as an adult. It's very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. So like every chance I got, I'd go riding, and every time we'd be out riding, it would be kind of hot and dusty, and they'd be like, dude, why are we here? Like, why are we not jet skiing right now? You know, I'm like, well, let's go do that now, you know? So, back then the training schedules was a lot different. It was more or less just going and doing stuff and then just being busy, like from sun up to sundown, literally. Go motocross riding, go jet skiing, and then go ride your bike, and then go eat dinner. You know, it was like that was kind of the training schedules, you know. But motocross is a gnarly sport. I got to like a pro vet level in my career of mm-hmm. motocross, you know, which was totally respectable, you know. I gotta say something. I went riding the, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago at a track, and Steve Caballero gets me out every now and then. And, it's gnarly. Like when you think you're like, oh, that's not a big deal. You know, going to Paula and going on the big track, you're just like, I was scared to death. I was just like, oh my God. Like you lose that confidence so fast. And, you know, I've been trying to get it back, but it's just like, I think it's gone. It's like, let's go ride my bike.
Paula is also on a very short list of tracks that no one enjoys.
Yeah.
I liked the vet track at Paula. The last time I was there was 2019. I'm sure they've done some changes since, but if I'm in Southern California, honestly, give me Glen Helen, give me Cahia, give me, Racetown 395 hasn't been around for decades. Give me those tracks over Paula. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Paula's the only one that it's close, so it's easy. And
yeah, it's right by you guys, right?
Yeah. What was the point when you decided that you could make a living out of being a professional jet skier? Did you have other choice? Like, did you say, I really want to do moto, but hey, I feel better on a jet ski, or I can see a path that could lead to something down the line?
Well, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I grew up in Alaska. I was 19 when I started riding a motorcycle I was 18, 19 when I became got into jet ski. So I was kind of a late comer to sport, you know? But I adapted myself really fast. A half season as a novice, a full season as an expert, and then straight into the pro races. So I literally had 2 years of amateur racing before I became a pro. And, the first year as a pro, I was second national. I got number two, you know, I was second behind Jeff Jacobs. So it was like a hockey stick, you know, I just went straight to the top. And, Bill Chapin, you know, I think you remember Bill Chapin,
man. Yep.
Yeah. God rest his soul. But you know, he and I raced against each other in the expert class, and, he was really fun to race because he was the PGS guy. Like, he had all the trickiest stuff, you know, like he had as good a stuff as Jeff did at the time. And, so we were racing pretty hard against each other, but yeah. The sport of jet skiing came really quick for me, and you know, it came quick for me, and I was around it for a long time. I think my career was like 22 years. You know, it's pretty long, you know, maybe 23 years, but,
You must have seen a huge change in the machinery itself as well. Like stand up jet skis are pretty rudimentary, but like, you still would have seen a lot of technology change. I bug Scott Burnworth about that all the time, is that he started on like dual shocks and now he's got EFI engines and four strokes and all that fun stuff. Like, it literally, like, he was in a cave with a rock racing, and now he's on the moon. So
yeah. So I'm going to back up. So the reason why I didn't go on the motocross thing is because that was a lot harder to start that late. You know,
right. And
obviously motocross took a lot more, you know, a lot more time to become really good.
You're in the crosshairs of the Cajon zone. You have basically half of the top 10 in the 80s in your backyard.
Right. Right. So the jet ski thing is what I really like to do too. But you know, there was more opportunity with jet ski at the time. Jet skiing was just starting to take off. And to answer your question, like, I got to see, I think I personally, you know, people will argue this or whatever, but my career time, like, that was the best the sport ever seen. You know, like, I got into it when it was really young, and a lot of growth and a lot of opportunity. And then also, you know, just seeing the changes of the whole sport, you know, go from full on grassroots stand up racing to a little bit of the sit down racing was, you know, kind of came into it, which when the sit down racing wasn't too bad when we first did it. Now it's on a whole nother level of, you know, just weight and size, which really, you know, kind of bums me out, because when we did race, sit downs, they were like, two guys could carry our race boats. They were like carbon fiber, and right. You know, they weren't any much heavier than a stand up jet ski, you know, at that time. Any rate, I got to see a lot of changes in the sport and the, you know, the technology within the, you know, the jet skis.
I mean, you also would have seen, like myself, I mean, I've been in, you know, the motorcycle industry for 30 years now, but even let's talk about how the bicycles have changed. I mean, like when you started to ride bicycles, I mean, I made a joke the other day to someone. It's like, hey, I had a GT that had no suspension, V brakes, to now where we are with one buyers and 29 inch. And, you know, it's just, you just think of bicycle, you go, there's no way they can make it better, but they sure do. They just get better and better.
Year after year. You know, it's funny. Like you watch some old videotapes, you know, with guys on 26 inch tire bikes, you know, guys like, you know, us, you know, not too, you know, like look taller and they look like giants on these little tiny bikes. You know, you're just like, you're like, oh my God, like how did they ride those things? You know, so It's the same with me on a stand up jet ski at 550, 440, 550 jet ski. You know, you were just like, you know, everything is the, you know, the swing with, you know, technology has been freaking gnarly. And it's almost getting too much. You know, it's like, you know, like some of the MotoGP bikes, you know, like they're so fast and there's so much technology with, you know, they're probably safer, but faster, but you know, traction control and all that stuff. Like it takes a little bit of the, you know, fun out. Like anytime I buy, like get into a new car, like I want to slide the car around, you know, I want to be able to like drive the car. They will not break the tires loose, you know? So
right.
Takes, you know, it's like, you know, I might get off the beaten path here, but I feel, and I say this to so many people in my, you know, my, age bracket that I think we got to live in the very best times of all times, you know? I'm saying that is because like my dad and, you know, when they grew up in the 40s and 50s, say, like they didn't have the technology, they didn't have a really decent motocross bike, you know? You know, in the late 80s, 90s, they were pretty decent motorcycles, you know?
Right.
And bicycles, like we had all these toys, you know, similar toys that we have now. Maybe they weren't as good as they are now, but we had the stuff to be able to do it. And the generation before that, they were just more, they just worked more, you know, they just didn't really have the really fun stuff. Like we got to experience no social media. We got to experience, toys that are pretty decent, can get you by.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm doing a really good job of explaining it, but I'm just really stoked, you know, and I don't want to bag on, you know, what's going on now, but I'm just saying, like, I really feel like we got to live in the golden era of, I don't know, life.
For sure. I mean, like you, even with the jet skis, like that 440, I mean, that was a bilge pump for the Cowie ships, right? They're all, hey, this is a bilge pump, but let's put this in a hole. I mean, you've seen that. We've seen, you know, we've seen Works motocross bikes go from twin shocks to single shocks. There's progression to, you know, where we are now and everything. I mean, a new 450 is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You know, we got to see all that. Now we're starting to see electronic stuff come in and it's like, well, I'm out if it's electronic. I like my two stroke or whatever it is, but you know, that's just part of the deal. But you're right. I think in all the industries we've touched on or the disciplines that, I think you're right. We have seen probably the most growth that anyone would have probably seen between bicycles, motorcycles, and jet skis. What's next? I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. I did see like something pretty cool. Someone sent me something in Spain. There's these little like, they're kind of like state, like 440s. They're like a surfboard with like a handle pull on them. And I think they're electric. And, I'll show it to you one day. They look pretty sick. Like that could be a pretty cool, you know, sport,
right. You know,
but I think they're like 15 grand, which I guess that's not too bad, you know, and these days, like everything's 10 grand nowadays, you know, like
you're not wrong.
Everything's at least 10 grand, you know, like you buy a new motorcycle, it's 10 grand, you know, so, yeah, at any rate, but yeah, I'm, yeah, Enough about my rant and analogy and analogy. Right. Sorry, excuse me.
So you were the Thor team manager for a long time. I mean, what was the part there where was it you that decided you were finished racing jet skis, or was it the part of jet skis was just starting to fall apart and then you're all, what am I going to do? There's this opportunity. And did you already have that thought back then? It's like, I'm going to promote bicycle racing down the future. Was that always a thought in your mind?
No, you know, I'm definitely not the guy that has a plan, you know. I mean, it's kind of like, you, I mean, I worked for Thor, Jeff Fox. I became really good friends with him, and he's based, you know, God rest his soul as well. But he's like, hey man, I want you to work for me. He made the dream job for me. It was just like, I'm going to pay you this much. You're going to work for us for the rest of your life. You know, you have job security, you know, and at the time I didn't know that, you know, when you work for a big brand, like, you know, I thought you just worked there, did your deal, and you just always got paid and you just worked there. You know, it was like you were in, you know. And then probably 5 years into that, actually a few years into that, Jeff decided to, he retired. So the whole company changed, and literally it wasn't for the better for guys like myself, you know, because I mean, I didn't go to college. Like, I went straight out of high school into what am I going to do, and then got into jet skis. So, you know, I didn't have a background in, you know, working, you know, I'd have been just probably a construction worker, you know, if I would have stayed in Alaska. But at any rate, so when that all changed and I got fired from there, you know, cause they changed their whole business plan and I didn't fit in it. And, you know, they were just like everything, you know, they build it up and then they just start, you know, pulling everybody out of it. And like, this guy can do two jobs. Let's get rid of him. And, you know, it was a really tough time in my life at that point, you know, because I had two brand new babies, you know, and, you know, not like I need to work, you know, like, I mean, the sport of jet skiing has given me so much, you know, but we didn't make the money that, you know, that the motocross guys make, you know, so, I mean, it was enough to save some money, but, you know, you still have to work, you know. A couple of the guys, you know, haven't worked, you know, but, you know, they didn't choose to have a family and a house, and they kind of live really, really small. So, you know, but I didn't choose that path. So I was shitting my pants when I was like, you know, what am I going to do? Where am I going to get a job? You know, and I probably went 6 months or a year, which was nice because I didn't have to, you know, I had some money saved, but I didn't have to go jump into something that I knew I didn't have to go to work at Home Depot or something that, you know, that I definitely wouldn't like. And then I got picked up at Spy, and that job actually taught me a lot because I'd already worked at Thor. So I kind of knew the workplace, and then Spy was kind of like, you know, you're the, you know, motorsports marketing manager, you know, and like I signed some pretty good guys. I had a budget, you know.
What years were these, by the way?
That was like 2005 or six, maybe.
Okay. So that's Kevin Windham. That's, yeah.
So
Sean Hamlin.
Hamlin's just before that. I think he was still wearing Spy into his, like the very end of his career, but yeah, he's there.
Yeah. My friend, Beaver Theosaka, the founder of Spy, is the one that kind of nursed that along to get me into that position.
Okay.
And then, you know, I got to work with some really like Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, Boris Head, you know, like I got to work with some, you know, some pretty high end people and did some really fun stuff with them while I was there. You know, and, you know, I learned a lot from that job, you know, and that's that's where I got into my, Michael Marks was the president at that time at Spy. And he kind of, you know, he kind of nursed, he was really into cycling, and that's where he kind of brought, he kind of brought this. I mean, I was already riding bicycles, but I wasn't racing them. But he's the one that kind of brought the, you know, event side of things to cycling, because we were promoting cyclocross stuff there. And, you know, so he kind of introduced that to me, really. So, and I learned a lot from that position, way more than the Thor position, way more.
Cause, and you had McGrath as well, right? Cause McGrath was always a spy.
He's still a spy guy. You know, he's been there for, he's done a really good job at the spy brand. He was already signed there, you know, but you know, one guy that I was proud of signing was Barsha. So that was one guy that I, you know, got on the spy team back in, you know, I think he was only there for maybe 2 years, 3 years.
What years were those?
That was like 2000, probably 10.
So he just finished at Geico and he'd gone American Honda at that point, somewhere
yeah.
in there?
Yep, okay. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we signed him right out of his team deal. So, mm-hmm. that was a cool one. I got to know Justin, you know, in those days. But did a lot of stuff with Spy. Like Spy was, you know, they were
for huge.
For so many years, they were like kind of, they were going down. And then when this whole new regime of, you know, in that 2000, probably 8 or 9 era, like it was like they got some money, they got some investors, you know, and they were trying to bring it back. But I think we were really just, you know, Spy had done such a great job in the very beginning that, you know, they'd built such a bitchin' brand, you know, that we were just kind of, you know, trying to bring it back to that, you know, with, you know, not doing as, like Beaver and all those guys, they crushed it on the marketing thing. Like they did so good.
And I mean, I think you had Jeremy there as well, right? I mean, he was probably the kingpin to an extent that attracted a lot of those other guys.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with Jeremy's, I mean, cause Jeremy was a Oakley guy before that.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that they just basically, you know, gave him more, you know, bigger part of the pie, you know, like made him really, you know, a part of the company where, you know, that's what, you know, as an athlete, that feels really good.
Is he invested in the company or is he just an athlete of the company?
He was invested. I think he's probably, I don't think he is anymore, but I don't know that for, I don't know where that stands, these days, but you know, I knew he was invested at one point.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Spy was absolutely iconic. What's crazy about, Spy is basically at the turn of the century, 1999, is actually the first time, the only year where Mitch Payton's Pro Circuit Kawasaki had anyone aside from Scott Goggles, which if I'm not mistaken, that year Spy goggles were actually manufactured by Scott, unless I'm getting mm-hmm. my facts mixed up. They ended up going back to Spy, but like, or for Scott after that. But if you think about it, Travis Pastrana on a 125 getting into the 250 class, one of the most electrifying athletes the sport has ever seen. Then you have, at that point, like the king of supercross still is to this day. Like no one will ever argue with that. They had two of the biggest athletes in the sport, period. And yeah, like if you're an athlete with Oakley, obviously like they've got a big roster. They've got tennis players. They've got, cyclists. They've got all kinds, but with Spy, you were almost like you stood alone as far as being the preeminent athlete with that brand. And between Travis and Jeremy, that was maybe one of the most iconic, if goggles have ever mattered more, it was during that time. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah, at that time, I mean, that was before my time at Spy, but they, you know, they had Sonny Garcia. They had like, they had some, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was they had a pretty big field for, you know, Oakley is this big, you know, Spy was just like a little tiny little guy with flexing their muscles. So it was pretty cool to see when you get into a brand, you know, that they were that they made that much impact in a pretty short period of time. So,
I mean, just Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, that's just so diverse, right? From NASCAR to moto to surfing, you know, they had a lot of fingers in some pies, which really helped them.
Yeah. And that's what they got away from that. They went straight into surfing there for a while. You know, that's why, you know, maybe, you know, it went in that direction, you know, like they had so many people, different people coming in and out of the brand. So they took the brand more in the surfing direction. And I think they realized that the surfing market was a little hard to penetrate versus, you know, the motorsports brand that they built Spy on, you know, so that's why, you know, they put so much, they brought a guy in, well, like myself, you know, that kind of knew some of these people and kind of built those relationships back up, you know, and then, then basically around 2013, they went through some tough times and they're like, hey man, you know, you're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to let you go, but we're going to hire you on back as a contractor. So in all respects, you know, like Spy, even though they did, like when I left Thor, I got nothing. Like literally, hey man, they gave me, I had a company car and I'm not bagging on them, but I mean, it was just a really tough time in my life, you know, to just have all that taken away, you know, with two little kids, you know, and, you know, it was tough. But Spy, like they literally gave me a, you know, they rehired me, you know, as a contractor. They kept me on, but they just couldn't have me on as a full-time employee, you know. So it worked out better for me. I mean, that's where I'm going with this, is that's what pushed me into like, oh shit, man, I got to do something. And, right. You know, it's like, man, maybe some local mountain bike races would do it, you know? And I got to, you know, once we started doing some of those Spy, bicycle events, you know, I got to know some of the people in the, you know, in the cycling world. So, I said to one of my buddies that, you know, is pretty cool. I was like, hey man, let's do this. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. And I just kept pushing on. I didn't have a job. So, you know, got some sponsors, built it up, and we had our first event. You know, we had 120 people. I'm like, dang, this is rad. You know, we thought we were going to get like 30 people, you know, so, you know, it was pretty cool. And then, so we got this going, and my friend Kurt, Gensheimer, he was kind of the cycling guy, you know. He was, everyone knew him in you know, San Diego as the cycling guy. They didn't know me from Adam. They're just like, you know, who are you? You know, you're not a mountain biker. You're a jet skier, you know, motorcycle race, you know, you don't belong here, you know? So, anyway, we just kept going. And so we got three races into this deal, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to move to Reno. And I'm like, wait, you're going to do what? Like, I can't do this myself, you know? And he's like, yeah, you can. You'll be fine. So he took off. And I'm just like, dude, like, oh, shit. I was shitting myself again. I'm like, oh, I got this. I can handle it. So just put my head down and, you know, started putting on races and, you know, building a consistency. You know, and that's what I wanted Quick and Dirty to be, is it's consistent, like a calendar that, you know, comes out a year, not the day or the month before a race, is just a lead up, you know, like you can plan for it the whole year. So that's where we're at now, is, you know, like I'm working on 2025 right now to have all of our dates, you know, they're on the site, and, you know, they're, you know, people can look forward to this, you know, sponsors can be like, okay, this is what they're doing, you know, so, a consistency.
Yeah, because your social media is pretty good. Like, you do a good job in presenting that, you know, the results are there straight away. The guys that support you with photos, they're up almost instantly, and people can get the photos and do their own social media. So, you know, it works quite well. And then apart from the summer series, which was it, eight races in 9 weeks, and then you've got the encore this week, which I'm going to stand on the top box this week. And then you do, you got your Dirty 30, you've got the Filthy 50, and then you have a couple others, one in Vegas, the Chainsmoker.
Yeah. So this, so I mean, literally like our last race is this Thursday, for the summer races. And then we take, you know, we take a break until October. So it's going to be nice because, you know, when we start racing, like pretty much, so when we start racing in October, it's like October, November, and December, and then straight into the Sagebrush into the next year. So literally since last October, like it's been racing until right now. So we have, a, you know, July and August sort of just kind of refresh, take a breath, reload, rethink, you know, so I'm looking forward to a little break.
I mean, you've got a good crew there. Like there's, you know, your announcer, I don't know his name, but I mean, he's always upbeat, you know, there's music, there's vendors there. Like it's just a good vibe all the time. But I, as a racer, I'll tell you, like, it's tough because you got to go to work all day. You think, I'm going to race, dude, I'm at work mode. I got to stay light on my feet. I got to hydrate. And then at 6 o'clock, I'm going to flip a switch and I'm going to race. And then you don't get home till 10 o'clock. And it's like, you know, it's a long drawn out day, but it's awesome. You know, it's good. I love racing through the week. I said that to you the other day. It's like, where else can you race on a Thursday night? And I just love to race. So,
I mean, man, they keep coming back. So there must be something to it, but you know, I'm glad you said that, Andrews, cause you know, my crew is amazing. Like we don't have to have too many meetings because everybody kind of knows what to do and we're kind of in a good, you know, good rhythm. But, you know, people don't understand like how much goes into producing a result within 15 minutes, 20 minutes of after a race. Like there's a lot of calculation going on, you know? And I mean, how, you know, doing a podium, there's not many race organizations that even do podiums within 15 minutes after a race, you know, it's like, I mean, that's sort of, you know, and that's something that we've done from the beginning. And, you know, that's what we kind of strive to be a little bit different than what, you know, what other race organizations are doing. And I mean, not saying anything bad about any of them, just like that's been kind of our, you know, our recipe, you know, and, you know, have a good entry fee, a cheap entry fee. No other bullshit, you know, no parking fees, no, you know, we do have a on-site, a $5 late fee, basically, but there's been places that, you know, $20 late fee, there's been a $10 parking fee, you know, you go to a bike race, you're thinking you're going to, you know, spend, you know, $30 to race, you know, it ends up becoming $100, you know, you're like, what the heck, you know, so we've tried to keep it. You know, we've tried to stay to our mission statement. We started, you know, in 2013.
Awesome.
That's to keep the cost down, have fun, you know, get a little buzz after the race and just have a good time.
Yeah. It's awesome. So when you look back over your career, over this whole span to where you are now, who's one of the guys that you would say has probably helped you the most in your career, like a mentor that's like, hey, obviously your wife has got to be a big one because she stood by you between all the days of coming home. I don't have a job, honey. I'm going to go do this. So who is the guy that you would say was probably your best mentor or guidance between all this to where you are now?
You know, I've had a lot. I have multiple ones, you know, my friend Beaver, Jeff Theosaka, he stands out. Brian Frank from Hammer Nutrition. I mean, they've all kind of mentored me and helped me, you know, make good judgments and bounce things off of them. There are so many though. I mean, there really are. I'm kind of, you know, drawing a little bit of a blank, which I sometimes do. But there has been so many people that, you know, that just helped me get along. But I think, I mean, to one person, my dad, for sure.
Awesome. Right. Okay.
I mean, he was always there, always.
So, throughout your travels, it seems like one of the biggest commonality throughout all of the challenges that you've taken on throughout your career, the bass drum behind it in my mind is sort of this theme of zero option mentality. If I don't make it work, it's like, I'm going to have to go do something else. I'm going to have to go be a construction worker. And in so many ways that incentive, or I think we talked about this on an earlier podcast with Sage Voda, is like, what happens if I don't network, and if I don't put in the time, and if I don't learn this business, I'll end up somewhere where I don't want to be. You've utilized that as, and it's a kind of a back against the wall mentality, but it served you well. It's allowed you to, not only give back to the community, but also be very successful at the same time.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, having your back against the wall, like you never can be complacent, you know, and never take anything for granted. So, I think that's the biggest part of just trying to, you know, putting the time into what you're doing, you know, and really, really, you know, embedding yourself into what you're doing, you know. And I really feel like, as you know, you can work really hard and just, you know, keep at it, you know. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They want the, you know, quick gratification, you know, and it takes time to build something, and you have to really believe in it, you know. And that's what I think people sometimes kind of shy away from, it because they believe in it, but they gotta really believe in it, and they gotta stick to it, you know. And they gotta, you know, I think that a lot of things that I think I try to put towards my success is follow through, you know. And that's like, if you tell someone you're going to do something, you have to do it, you know. If you forget, you know, because in our sport, in our sports, like, you know how many times people have told you, oh yeah, yeah, I got you, bro, man, I'll send you a pair of shoes, I'll send you this, I'll, you know, it's like, yeah, bro, it's like,
and they're called bro deals.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure that I have, you know, flaked out on some of those things, but I try really hard to have a good follow through and, you know, always remember, you know, just treat people that, you know, how you want to be treated.
Well, your consistency shows in your accolades, right? Or your championships. I mean, you can't get to that with not being consistent and staying true to yourself, because you have to train when you don't want to train. You have to do this when you don't want to do it. So, you know, that's a contestant of where we are now and the series that you have. So, you know, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you guys just giving me like a lot of, kudos. But you know, it's not just me that, you know, like I have the timing guys, Joey and Adrian, you know, Chip Miller, the announcer, you know, my whole crew, my wife, obviously, she's there each and every week.
Yep.
You know, I have a really good team, and, you know, this isn't just me. Like, yeah, I'm the one pushing, you know, pushing everything, but, you know, you have to have a good team, you know, for events, especially, because you've got to have people. There's no way around it. You know, you can't be in all the places you need to be, you know, all the time. And Andrew, thanks for, you know, I do enjoy going out and cheering people on and kind of giving them sort of, you know, that vibe. I feel like I want to lead by example, you know, like if I'm out there doing that, then, you know, these five other people are going to do it, you know, and then those five other people are going to do it, you know. So, you know, leading by example is my way of driving a team and just being a part of that movement.
Okay. No, like I said, it shows. It shows on Thursday nights. So, you know, awesome.
And that's another real quick, like, Quick and Dirty was founded by Weeknight Racing, but it's evolved into more than just that. You know, like, we have the weekend races, we have the Thursday night races. So, I mean, that's what I'm really proud of is we're pretty diversified. It's like, we have a camping event that's, I don't know if you've been out to the Sagebrush Safari.
No.
But That's a full camping. It's out in the middle of nowhere. You know, then we have the Filthy 50, which goes through basically through, you know, neighborhoods, towns. So it's like right in the, you know, an urban race that has taken off really well. You know, the Dirty 30 and then the one in Vegas, which is the Chainsmoker. So we kind of try to diversify ourselves here in San Diego County. Other than the Chainsmoker is the only one that's out of the state.
Right. That's right. That's, yeah. You mentioned before, you know, you could have done something like a BWR where it's out of state and big races, but you've just chose to keep it local and grassroots. So, cause that's a lot of logistics. Like I said, I mean, you see it week in and week out. I mean, when you see that repetitiveness over 8-9 weeks, it's like I said, you have a good crew that sit there and make it happen. So, obviously you have good systems in place that keep those people coming back.
Yeah. And then to drag those people to Arizona or wherever, you know, it's like, they're like, man, I got a real job. it's like, this doesn't really cut the bills. You know, I mean, I like doing this and helping out and stuff, but yeah, that's a whole nother, type of event promotion that, you know, I don't want to work too hard. Like I work pretty hard, but I don't want to work too hard. I still want to live the lifestyle that, you know, that I want to live, you know, and that's right. What this is all about. This is about a lifestyle. It's not about making money. It's about what makes you happy at the end of the day. You know, what is it going to take? You know, if you want to make money, making money is hard, you know, and to make more of it, you got to work harder. So, you know, I just want to make enough to raise my family, put them through college, do the stuff that they need. And then I just want to just have a little bit of time for myself, you know, to do what I want to go do.
So, I mean, you still ride every day a bicycle?
No.
Is that your, no, not every day?
No. Like literally there's times like when I'm training for last year was the first time that I rode a lot, you know, and that was training for the World Gravel Championships. Mm-hmm. That was probably the most I've ever ridden was last year. And this year I'm nowhere near the miles that I rode last year.
Okay.
But I did sign up for Leadville this year. So that's kind of my big race this year.
That's that August.
August 10th.
And right. We have a guy on our iSpeed team that's going to do it as well. He's in training for that. So that was what prompted me to, I did a 100-mile challenge at Vail and it was all under the table a little bit, but I get the part of your organization and the systems and the people. I mean, I did it by myself because I didn't want to go through. I didn't want to go do permits and insurance and all that. I just wanted to see, and it was purely for this guy, Silvio, to do 100 miles at and 14,000 feet of climbing. So again, I know what you're going through and it's like asking people and you're relying on people. And then like we had about 30 people, but you know, again, it's like, I don't know if I'll do that again. I don't know. We'll see how we go. But,
yeah. This is probably a one and done for me, you know? Mm-hmm. So, this week though, after the encore race, me and a group of guys are going to go up to, Bishop and do the White Mountains, which is, I think it's 14,000 feet of climbing.
I know what that feels like.
So, I mean, it's definitely going to be, I mean, I love to climb. But this is definitely, I'm probably going to not want to see my bike for a long time after this Saturday.
Or even after Leadville.
Wish us luck. You'll
probably,
man,
hang after Leadville. So.
I mean, it's pretty crazy what cyclists will do. You know, I think they're all up for a challenge. That's for sure.
Brad's not really a cyclist. He's more of a hockey guy, but it's pain either way, right?
Hey, I'm a mountain bike champion from when I was 15. And actually, you would laugh at this, Victor. I am like when I actually entered that that championship when I was, I think it was the year I was either 14 or 15 years old. My dad and I were like sort of shopping for my next mountain bike. We ended up getting a giant iguana from in like 2001. But the bike that I had ordered wasn't in yet. So I raced my dad's Rocky Mountain, like it was a red frame. I don't know what I'd have to look up the, like the model of it. It was Rocky Mountain from like 1989. And I won the first race of the year against a bunch of kids that had like full suspension bikes and they had all the cool shit. And I'm riding my dad's 15-year-old mountain bike and just waxed everybody. So, yeah, it's not always what you're on. Sometimes it's about what's inside.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. 100%. Yeah, I've ridden. I mean, you know, somebody made a comment like, oh, man, you always have the, you know, nicest kits and the nicest bikes. And, you know, I didn't grow up like that. I grew up, my dad bought me an MR50, nothing but the MR50. No helmet, no nothing. Literally like,
nice.
Here you go. I'm like, Dad, what about the helmet? You don't need that. Dad, what about the boots? I wanted the boots like more than anything. You know, they were like full leather boots, you know.
12 buckles, the whole thing.
Yeah, like I was like, Dad, can I have the boots? Nope, no boots. You get the bike, you know, and they, you know, they had the little points there, like they would run and then they would break. And then, you know, it was like, Dad, can you fix the bike? But it was amazing. Like I didn't grow up like that. I mean, I'm not complaining. Like I wouldn't change anything, but so like I always saw people like, you know, I would go my first jet ski race. Like I had a shitty ass, you know, a life jacket. That's all I had. You know, and a helmet that was pieced together. And I, you know, race, you know, pull up to the starting line with these guys and these iridium goggles and just, they look like they were just pros. And I'm just like, oh, I'm going to get smoked. You know, I'm going to get beat. You know, I mean, and I love the fact that, you know, I was just that, just the, I mean, I wanted all that stuff, but you know, I didn't have it. And looking back, it was amazing. Like it's pretty rad to, just have whatever you had on your back to and go race, you know? So that's what I try to, you know, tell my kid, you know, I guess I got a little bit of my dad in me when my kids want, you know, all the stuff. And I'm like, just get out there and do it, you know? So,
like it.
But things have changed nowadays. Like literally, it's amazing the sports are that we have today, the travel sports. I mean, they're like professionals, man. They have,
oh yeah,
they have everything from the backpacks to the jackets to the whole uniform is like top notch.
No, there's like travel baseball teams that have more team gear than like the 1980 Olympic teams, which is absolutely nuts. Victor, this has been so much fun. We got some final questions for you. We're asking basically everybody the same four questions to close things out, and we'll let you get on with the rest of your day. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great, man.
Awesome. First of all, thanks again for making the time. This has been really fun.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes. So what is something that you wish you did more of or something you wish you did last year or within the last year?
Travel more and, explore more of California.
Okay.
Awesome.
What book are you currently reading? Or if you're not currently reading a book, what book have you read recently that, had an impact on you?
The last book I read, which was probably 10 years ago, was, Lance Armstrong.
Okay.
And it's the only book I can literally say I read from front to back. I do not like to read.
No? Are you a podcast guy?
Yeah.
Podcast, I mean, yeah. Or audiobook?
That or just, you know, just, I mean, obviously I read, but you know, I emails and stuff like that, but I just literally like, I don't know. I'm just always going, you know, so like, the reading thing is like something I don't, you know, I do like to go on trips with podcasts.
Right. Yeah, the idea of doing like 30 minutes of reading before bed every night. I try to do it. It's like, it's kind of honestly in so many ways. So like, it's a nice sentiment, but like, I don't know how many people are actually being able to like, get your mobility routine in and your, the reading and, meditation and you know what I mean? All that stuff. Like it's tough to juggle all those balls, but yeah, that is a great book though. I can't remember what it's Lance Armstrong. Is it More Than the Bike?
Not About the Bike?
Not About the Bike.
Yeah, I think that it was his main book. Like, you know, I mean, before he was, you know, caught, you know, doping or whatever, he was still lying about all that stuff, you know, but
yeah, no, that's an old book. Cause I remember, they did a motocross video, from 2004 and some of the privateers had that in their evening reading and stuff like that. Super motivational book.
What is your favorite podcast, Victor? Who's your go-to guy or person?
You know, Joe Rogan has some funny stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Troy Lee got me, to listen when we drove up to, he was in a different car, but he was like, dude, we stopped and ate and we were going to Tahoe, I think. And, he's like, you got to listen to this, Elon Musk guy. And that was probably 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. He's like, you got to listen to this. So he set it all up for me. And he's the one that basically got me into the podcast thing, you know, mm-hmm. But I think it was the Joe Rogan, Elon Musk issue when he smoked a little pot and then got basically like lost a shit ton of money. Cause you know, he was on camera and the stockholders or whatever got all pissed off. And so that was kind of funny. Just listening to him and his crazy, you know, thought process of, you know, what he wants to build and do is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Rad. That's super cool. What is your next project you have lined up? What's in the crosshairs right now that you're about to go ahead and dominate?
Oh, man. You know, I want to. It's really based around, you know, putting on, you know, what the event stuff needs or wants. What do we have to do to change, you know, what we're currently doing, you know? So the first thing that comes to mind is making the Sagebrush Safari, a bigger event and better event. And that's, you know, making it a stage race. You know, it's something that San Diego doesn't have. Yeah, it's like just making it, you know, 2 or 3 day stage race, which there's not many stage races here in California. But that's something that I've been, you know, trying to logistically see if I can, you know, pull it off.
Awesome.
That is super cool.
Yeah. So that comes off and then seeing how I'm going to put my kids through college.
Yeah. That sounds like a mountain to climb as well. Who has been your greatest mentor? Who's helped you the most?
Like I said, you know, before I guess that's a question. I've had a lot, you know, but I always go back to just my dad, you know, my dad just being, you know, and he really never told me what to do, like, which is really strange. He wasn't like the dad that was saying, hey, you have to do this or you have to do that. Like he was just always this, like, just always there for me to, you know, just be like a cheerleader, you know, just like, yeah, do it, you know? So.
Awesome.
Yeah. I literally I've have so many people that have helped me along the way and, you know, they all know who they are, but you know, I always gotta go back to my dad.
It was super dope. Well, Victor, this has been an absolute pleasure. Just talking to you. There's 1,000 different ways we could have gone with this podcast. I hope that those who are listening got a lot out of it. Especially your stick-to-itiveness, your grit and your ability to be flexible and be successful in so many different areas. once I hang up this phone call, my next call is definitely to Scott Burnworth, to share all kinds of just disparaging stories about you. But also, I think the two of you guys need to come on probably in a month or two here, to kind of talk about the era in which you guys, competed and built a business and just like Southern California, 1982 through 95. Like, man, if I could time travel and stay there, that's probably where I live out my days. Well, you guys are right in the thick of things.
I mentioned that to Victor the other day, where it's like, hey, I was in Australia. We had to wait 3 months for motocross action, splash, mountain bike action to arrive. Right. And I'm looking at these guys going, man, these guys, Southern California in the 80s and the 90s was just like,
there was same for me. I was just like you. I was in Alaska, you know, and I mean, so my friend Pat Crabb, he's coming to California to race GNCC or the Golden State Series. Mm-hmm. And he's going to go to the World Jet Ski Finals. And I literally, quick story, I literally said, hey man, can I go? Can I jump in your van and just go? I left Alaska and never went back. And one of, you know, like we went to Carlsbad. I went to Carlsbad with him and Rick Johnson walks by me and I was just like, oh my God, like, dude, these guys are normal people, like normal people.
Yeah.
And we as people in other states think that they're literally like they walk on, you know, they walk on the moon, you know, they're like the red carpet is laid out for them wherever they go. And dude, they're doing the same thing we are, you know, yep. And same thing. I went and I saw Larry Rippenkroger, he was the man in 1986 for jet ski racing. And I was literally like, oh my God, I was just blown away by, you know, what you build these people up to be. And they're just like we are.
Amazing. Yep.
Awesome, man. Well, like I said, this has been so much fun. I can't wait to have you on again to discuss that golden era of action sports in general. It like so much of what happened then, filtered into what X Games and all that fun stuff was able to become in the later 90s, even into the 2000s. And yeah, like if you have any, Thor gear from the early 2000s, there's some legendary kits from Pro Circuit and stuff like that. I'd love to see it, but, this has been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, you guys. Andrew,
appreciate it.
Looking forward to see you on Thursday. Yeah. I think I'm going to race myself. So.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's a good course, this one. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I never race my own races, but you know, this one is kind of like, it's a big lap, you know, it's like, once it's going, it's fine. I have a good staff, you know, people want me to race. So, I'll give her a go.
Awesome.
Why not? Cool.
So,
all right. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, guys, do not hang up just yet, but for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.
Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times. This one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans. Play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time time.